Looking for a guaranteed way to create content that resonates with your audience? Start a podcast. Interview your ideal clients and let them choose the topic of the interview. Because if your ideal clients care about the topic, there's a good chance the rest of your audience will care about it too. Learn more at sweetfishmedia.com.
You're listening to B2B Growth, a daily podcast for B2B leaders. We've interviewed names you've probably heard before, like Gary Vaynerchuk and Simon Sinek, but you've probably never heard from the majority of our guests. That's because the bulk of our interviews aren't with professional speakers and authors. Most of our guests are in the trenches leading sales and marketing teams. They're implementing strategy. They're experimenting with tactics. They're building the fastest growing B2B companies in the world. My name is James Carberry. I'm the founder of Sweetfish Media, a podcast agency for B2B brands, and I'm also one of the co-hosts of this show. When we're not interviewing sales and marketing leaders, you'll hear stories from behind the scenes of our own business. We'll share the ups and downs of our journey as we attempt to take over the world. Just kidding. Well, maybe. Let's get into the show.
Welcome back to the B2B Growth Show. I'm your host for today's episode, Logan Lyles, Director of Partnerships here at Sweetfish Media. I am joined by Tom Williams. He is the CEO of DealPoint. Tom, how are you doing today, man?
Really nice to talk to you, Logan. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, really excited to talk to you, Tom. I appreciate you making some time out of your schedule to chat with us. We're going to be digging into this concept of proactive, ongoing disqualification, how B2B sales reps can get bad deals out of their funnel and how that can actually make them more effective. And I'm really excited to dig into some of the takeaways you have there. Before we do that, I'd love for you to share with our listeners a little bit about your background and what you and the folks at DealPoint are up to these days.
Yeah, sure thing. So I've been a sales and marketing guy for 20-something years. Most recently, I was put in charge of a sales team, but I came to it from a more marketing perspective of how can we make these customers happier. And I saw consistently that my sales guys didn't really have the same view of the deal that the customers had if I called them up. And so I saw this in both the electronics industry and then also in the SaaS enterprise industry. And I realized that there's a couple of consistent places in a deal where the selling team and the buying team can get misaligned. And then it was one night, middle of the night, this epiphany hit me of, if we can get these guys on the same page, everybody's happier. There's less wasted time, deals can close faster, and you end up with happier customers. So I put a fantastic team together here in Portland, and we've been doing DealPoint for about a year and a half.
Awesome. I love it. I think you hit the nail on the head there. Sellers and buyers getting misaligned. Sometimes you can think you're on the same page, but definitely not. I had a LinkedIn post just here recently about, you know, when does a sales cycle begin? Oftentimes that's different for the seller than it is in the buyer's mind. So I think this is definitely an applicable topic for a lot of folks. I know the first thing you wanted to touch on within this topic, Tom, is disqualification as an ongoing process and some of the ways that you can incorporate that. Tell us a little bit more about the role that multi-stage playbooks may play in this developing disqualification as an ongoing process.
Yeah, sure thing. The observation I've had is that any good sales process, there's discovery, of course, and then there's always going to be a qualified checkbox at the end of that discovery. Mm-hmm. But where I think a mistake is made is it's like the discovery is some kind of eternal stage where once you are anointed as qualified, it can never change. But of course, that's not the situation. So what we like to see is more qualifiers based on what stage you're at in the deal. So say you have a year-long deal, look at a model deal that that goes according to pace and see are there any consistent markers at, say, every month or every quarter, where should that deal be now? And use those as ongoing qualifiers. So if they're not hitting those stages, it's a lot easier for reps to let go. At the beginning, you might say, have we identified the economic decision maker? Yes, we have. But that's a far cry from, let's say, month 9. Really, you should be able to say, I've actually spoken with that person and they've agreed that they're the economic decision maker. Those can be two very different things. Or maybe I've identified the pain versus 3+ decision makers have signed off on the value model. Very, very different qualifiers, but as you get deeper into the deal, you need to make sure you're still on track. Otherwise, you don't really have a deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you have a deal that's aptly qualified for that stage in your cycle?
Yeah, exactly.
So those are some things that you want to, like you said, take your optimal deal, use that as your benchmark to create these points in the road that you're looking for as you qualify in each stage. What about red flags to look out for, things that should clue you in to disqualify a deal on the flip side of this, Tom?
Yeah, well, if beyond actually having those, if you like, proactive qualifiers, and I've seen some really smart companies who actually plug these into their Salesforce opportunities, and you can't progress the stage until you input these data points. That's a great way to handle that. But there are also more generic red flags. So it could be a certain amount of time in between meetings, certainly a number of touches or ignored touches, I should say, where the guy's gone dark and you just hearing nothing back. But one that I really like is the percent of buyer roles that are filled. So what is it, 6 or 7 average decision makers on an enterprise deal? Mm-hmm. If you only know 2 names, then you don't have a deal. So as you go along, you should be filling in those profiles over time. And if you don't have the right number, that's a giant red flag that you're not where you think you are.
I love that. The other thing I know you mentioned as we were chatting a little offline, Tom, was helping reps let go of bad deals, which can be a tough thing to do. You touched on, you know, even just logistically, the way that you set up Salesforce or your CRM with the inability to move stuff forward. But what are some of the things you can do to help your sales team let go of bad deals and almost fail faster?
Well, I think the biggest thing you can do, and this is direct feedback from a lot of different senior sales managers with whom I've spoken over the months and years, is you have to train your managers properly, because it's the culture that defines whether or not a team holds on to bad deadwood or lets it go. So if you can get the expectation to your mid-level managers, hey guys, we don't want trash in our funnel, then that message will filter down into the reps. On the contrary, if the manager says, I need to see a big fat funnel, then they're going to sandbag it. They're going to put what they know is not good info in there, just to say, okay, boss, here's a big fat funnel. So really it starts with that, setting a managerial expectation. But then something I really like to do is quantify the opportunity cost of poor disqualification. So if you take your quarterly number and then divide it by how many working days there are in a quarter, you can get some pretty stunning numbers. So for example, if you have, say, a $12 million goal on your quarter, there are 64 working days in a quarter. So that's $195,000 per day that your team has to bring in to hit quota. When you look at it that way and you say, hey guys, do you want to work on a dead deal, or do you want to disqualify early and leave that extra time, that $195,000 per day of potential, and work on something that's actually going to close? Take that one step further and actually put it into what is their commission on that additional sale.
There you go.
You really, really can hit a number real quick that you spend, every day you spend on a bad deal is wasted opportunity cost, and it's deadly. It just really, mm-hmm. really kills you. Take those metrics, those red flags, and those multi-stage playbook qualifiers and build them into your process. That way there's some empirical evidence inside the opportunity. Hey, it's okay to walk away from this one because they didn't hit qualify 1, 2, and 3, and there's 3 flags. It's a lot easier to walk away from that than it is just if you have a bad feeling about something.
Yeah. Well, you hit on my next question there is, you know, how do you really get reps to let go of those bad deals? I love what you said there, tie it back to their paycheck, tie it back to their commission, because mm-hmm. that's, you know, follow the commission and you follow the salesman, right? but then tying it back to, let's not make this a gut check thing, guys. Let's make it somewhat black and white as much as possible so that it's easier for you to let go. You can look at it and say, yeah, I can see the evidence is kind of against me on this one, and therefore it's easier for me to let go, because there's still that idea of I'm taking hold of more opportunity, but I'm letting go of some at the same time. I love how those work together. Tell us how you think that this proactive disqualification can actually establish trust. You mentioned that as we were talking offline, Tom. Do you mean with the buyers that you kind of give them the sense that, hey, I'm not going to sell you something that's not right for you?
Yeah, I heard this from a guy over at Dell a couple of months ago. He said he really encourages his people to say no as quickly as possible, A, for all those reasons that we've identified, but B, because it brings the credibility of the rep up. You know, when we're in this kind of higher end deal, we really are consultants. We're offering a solution. And if the prospect gets the notion that I'm going to make you buy my thing no matter what, your credibility really goes out the window. If you can say, this one's not right for the following reasons, you should look at X solution. I promise that they will come back to you the next time they have a need, and they're going to come to you first. So you establish a lot of credibility as that solution partner versus just a transactional schlepper of product.
Today's growth story is about a leading global cybersecurity company. Even though they're incredibly successful, they struggled with demand generation within an extensive contact database. To solve this problem, they worked with a partner to implement a multi-tactic program that included email, ad retargeting, and inside sales and marketing outreach activities. I hope you're sitting down for this next part, because the program generated an ROI of over 500%. So what kind of partner can deliver these jaw-dropping results? MRP Prolytics. MRP Prolytics is an insights-powered account-based marketing platform with streaming predictive analytics baked into its core. Integrating multi-channel ABM execution on these insights, MRP Prolytics triggers display, email, direct mail, and global inside sales in real time, helping the largest marketing departments in the world deliver the right message to their customers at just the right time. Can MRP Prolytics get similar results for you? Probably. Find out by visiting mrpfd.com or click the link in the episode description of this interview. All right, let's get back to the show.
So tell me a little bit more about this K2C, the kick to curb metric that you've talked about.
Yeah, so this is something that we're working on internally with our existing customers. The idea is that as a manager, you know who your successful salespeople are. You can look at what their actual just quota is every quarter. But it's harder to figure out who are my good disqualifiers. And ultimately, the most important value of this is when you're looking at who can my other reps learn from. So who do I want to bring up for a brown bag lunch and learn? And you want to look at the leaders in your team to say, all right, Sally is a great disqualifier. Let's hear what her techniques are. So what we like to look at is the average length of days of lost deals. So it doesn't matter what the overall is for all of your deals. You want to look just at those closed lost deals. The longer, the worse. So shorter is better on average days of lost deals. Mm-hmm. Some things that a couple of companies have heard, they will actually swap out the reps on gone dark deals. So somebody says, you know, I can't move this. They haven't responded. They've hit all those red flags. Then they'll swap up the accounts and see if somebody else has better luck, either through personality or perseverance or just dumb luck. But you can measure what that resuscitation rate is, and really want to see who is good at only handing over truly dead deals. Mm-hmm. Because those people are good at disqualifying. They say, this guy is bad, and they don't come back to life. Because there's a narrow difference between a fantastic disqualifier and somebody who's lazy and can't to put in the 15 touches or whatever it takes.
Right, right. I love that double-edged approach, because if you're just judging reps on how quickly they move stuff to close lost, I can hear sales managers saying, hold on a second. Yeah. I'm going to have people just throwing stuff that way and say, look, I'm fantastic at losing deals. But if they're losing deals that cannot be resuscitated, as you put it, by another sales rep, then they're moving on from the right deals, right?
Exactly, yeah. And then the final thing that I like to see is the ratio of closed won to opportunities in a particular stage. So say you have your penultimate stage is probably a negotiation stage, something like that. Look to see how many deals are dying at that stage versus how many deals are dying at the first discovery or the second discovery or demo or wherever that is earlier in the sales cycle. if you're having a lot of deals die in those latter stages, that's a huge warning that that person isn't very good at qualification, or, and this is a big or the organization doesn't have good process around identifying bad deals quickly. So when you see that, you want to throw some more qualifiers in sales process earlier on and really try to nip that in the bud, just because it's so expensive to drag these big deals along, you know, flying people all over the country, spending time on proposal only for them to die. There has to have been a question you could have asked earlier that would have nipped that in the bud. And your job as a sales manager to figure out what's that question, and then how do I get my people to ask that question consistently, record it consistently, and then act on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love it. So, Tom, tell us a little bit more. You've touched on some metrics you can look at in your sales funnel, some metrics you can look at per individual sales rep. What are some of the other ways that sales managers and sales teams can operationalize this without creating an enormous spreadsheet or, you know, this enormous question tree with tons of if-then statements that, you know, sales reps are never actually going to use? What are some of the things they can do to put this into practice, start to disqualify bad deals earlier in their sales funnel?
So we call it the $75,000 spreadsheet, because, you know, every year for the kickoff, the sales manager invests in a massive sales process. It can be $100,000, it can be $50,000. But I think I saw a stat that it's 120 days is how long the average bump lasts of those sales processes, and then the reps go back to normal. So that's because it's not operationalized, because it's really not embedded into their process. So I think the three biggest things you can do is, first of all, have a written down sales process with that multi-stage playbook. So it's not just a playbook to get the first meeting or to go through that first demo. It's a, what are the plays that we want to do at each of our stages? The second thing you can do is make sure that you're getting validation back from the customer for each of those criteria. Because if you don't have that two-way communication, then it's just a lot more likely that there's going to be a misunderstanding. And where you may have said, yeah, I'm sure I found the economic buyer and I'm sure they're going to sign off on this. You know, actually hear it from the horse's mouth. Yes, I agree with that. And preferably get that documented some way. And then the third thing is, you know, I think you should do this manually for a while. You really should get it where the team is familiar with the process and the spreadsheet works just fine for a long time in tracking this stuff. Then go to the bother of pushing it into Salesforce so that the opportunity is being tracked. You want to do it manually to make sure that you've got all those criteria before you're paying somebody to update Salesforce. And of course, you know, I'm slightly biased. I'll admit it. Something like DealPoint will help that, because it's a point in between the sales team and the buying team where you can collaborate on these assumptions and actually get this information captured and get that validation. Mm-hmm. But really, I think you need to have that process written down, and a piece of paper is just fine for the first few months. Nail it, make sure that it works. You've got those key criterias up front, and then put it into some kind of automation so that it's operationalized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the best sales books I've read here recently is Never Split the Difference by Chris Voss, a former FBI hostage negotiator. And one of the things he talks about that in that book is the power of no, how we as salespeople are very, very afraid to hear no. And I think that comes into play here. As you mentioned, go ahead and ask the question, hear it from the horse's mouth. You know, are you the decision maker? Who else is involved? Whatever those qualifiers are for that stage. Don't be afraid of no, because not asking the question and just saying, well, I don't know, Mr. Customer, if X, Y, and Z, and maybe letting it linger and see if they respond, just asking the question and getting a yes or a no is much more valuable than a, you know, a quick maybe.
Well, and that goes back to that credibility thing, because if you can disqualify faster, then you have saved your customer a bunch of wasted time too. Because either they're shopping around for a solution, or you're getting them on the phone all the time. But either way, it's taking up their time away from their day job. So the more efficient you can be in establishing if there's a good fit and proving it to them, the happier they're going to be, because you're not wasting their time.
That's a phenomenal point. That efficiency is going to win you goodwill with the customer as much as it's going to benefit you from just protecting your valuable selling time. I love it.
Yeah.
Well, Tom, this has been a great conversation. I feel like we could go on all day. I feel like you've delivered a ton of value to our listeners in a succinct episode here. If anybody listening to this, Tom, would like to stay connected with you, ask any follow-up questions, or learn more about you and the company DealPoint, what would be the best way for them to reach out or find you somewhere?
Certainly, I'm on LinkedIn near constantly. There are a lot of Tom Williamses, though. So I actually started a group of people called Tom Williams who are in sales, and as a LinkedIn group. So I'm LinkedIn. I'm TDG Williams is, or you can just look for DealPoint on LinkedIn, or go to DealPoint.io, or email Tom@DealPoint.io. Those are the options.
I love it. Well, Tom, thank you again for being on the show.
Thank you very much, sir. I really, really enjoyed it. And thanks for doing the service. I've really enjoyed the podcasts from other people and got a lot out of them.
Absolutely. Thanks, Tom.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Digital marketing agencies have a tough job. You have to stay on top of the latest marketing strategies for your clients and your agency. What if there was a way you could address both at the same time? Imagine your agency putting out content with greater quality and quantity. Envision bringing your clients a turnkey solution for one of B2B marketing's fastest growing media strategies, podcasting. You know all those clients asking for your help with their account-based marketing efforts? Picture being the first to bring them the idea of content-based networking, showing them the proven strategy for breaking into their most coveted accounts. Here's the concept. Sweetfish Media is looking to work with a limited number of innovative agencies interested in a new partnership model. We produce a podcast for your agency. You introduce the power of podcasting and Sweetfish services to your clients. Everybody wins. Learn more at sweetfishpartners.com.